another world, another time, in the Age of Wonder. 1,000 years ago, this land was green and good, until the crystal cracked. Then strife began. Today, once more, they gather at the crystal as the first sun climbs to its peak.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus review of The Dark Crystal.
I knew you would come!
A Podbean backer review chosen by Rob Meister.
This is what I came for. The Dark Crystal. The Three Suns.
Hosted by Arnie, Stuart, and Jacob.
The prophecy is fulfilled. We are again one.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
This won't hurt. We just want to drain your living essence.
Listener discretion is advised.
Go, Gelfling! I fear to death.
Today we're talking about The Dark Crystal, starring Stephen Garlick, Lisa Maxwell, Billy Whitelaw, Percy Edwards, directed by Jim Henson and Frank Oz. This is your boy Arnie, the dark co-host of Now Playing.
And Stuart.
And this is your moldy mildew, mother of a mouth muck co-host, Jacob. That's in a PG movie, guys. Mouth muck, PG.
And this is our extra thank you for being an August donor. We already did the August show. We did Castaway last week, and we had a spare week. We figured there had been another request by one of the listeners. Why don't we just squeeze it in here and give you a two-for-one deal?
Yes, thank you to Robert Meister, or as I like to call him, the Rob Meister. I hope he doesn't mind that, but that's what I'm calling him.
Hopefully he's a big Rob Schneider fan. I would be angry if he called me that.
Jacob, making copies.
Making copies. Oh.
He loves it as much as I love being called Stewie Baby.
You did work at a coffee shop, Jacob.
I did. I know. I did make copies indeed.
So Rob donated to pick Dark Crystal because this is a movie he has a lot of personal history with. He and his brother were obsessed with it. And he says from the ages of 8 to 10, they'd rent that movie every week. So like 104 movie rentals and assuming at least that many watches. And looking back, he's realizing that maybe it was the least appropriate movie for children that he was finding in the children's section, but he loved it. And then when he was in college, he got more into the art side of filmmaking and appreciated it technically. And he thinks it's a, quote, weird slash fascinating slash beautiful movie. And he wanted to know what we thought about it.
Yeah, that is my memory of it as well. I saw it at just the right age. I think I was 9, Christmas 1982. Me and my brother slip into the movie theater. I was a kid teethed on Sesame Street, watched The Muppet Show. I had gone to the theaters for Muppet Movie, Great Muppet Caper. I even had a few toys in the board game. I played the piano like Rolf. I was into the Muppets. And man, I had no idea what I was going to get when I saw it. Strange. And I was impressed. It wasn't like a recoiling. I connected with its morbid preoccupation with death, but I was stunned. I couldn't believe that this was coming from Jim Henson.
The crazy thing is, this is one of my earliest memories. Like, I'm a few years younger than you guys. I think I was 6 when I saw this in theaters. And I've only seen it that once before I watched it again for this review. But it's a film I've always wanted to go back to. because I had so many memories. I'm like, I remember these really gross vultures and then these like anteaters that are really slow. And then like an elf that I think is a boy, but it looks like a girl and it has a girl's name. I had very heteronormative ideas about gender at six, I guess. But like, I remembered as Crystal getting stabbed. I remembered so much about it. And I always wanted to go back to it. I'm like, is it really good? Like, there's these giant rabbits with long legs that I remembered running around. But I never got around to it. Even when we were doing the book, like, I'm like, oh, maybe I should rewatch that. Maybe that's underrated. Because I don't think there's a whole lot of love for it, at least among general audiences. I know it has a cult following.
And I have a very similar story to both of you. I was 8 years old when this came out and a Muppet fan, big into Muppets, not so much into Sesame Street at that age.
Eight's a little old.
But, Sesame Street is like a gateway drug into the Muppets. Kermit the Frog is in both. And so I can't remember exactly what got me into theaters to see this. I'm thinking it was probably my older sister who was more into this kind of fantasy stuff. She was the one introducing me to Chronicles of Narnia around this time and told me, hey, Muppets movie. And I'd, seen Muppet Movie and Muppet Caper. And so I went to see this and, I was eight. I haven't seen this movie since. My memory was confusion. Like, I had trouble following it, and all I remembered were vulture-like puppets.
Yeah, it seems like the consensus, whenever I think about watching it again, like, the consensus was, great Muppet work, or puppet work, I guess. I don't know if these are Muppets, but confusing story. It was something that didn't quite reach its potential. That was the buzz I always remember reading about when I thought about going back to it.
Yeah, I thought that it was considered a flop, but when I look at the math, it made $40 million on a $25 million budget. That's probably breaking even, but it's nothing to brag about when you consider that the Muppet movies tend to make that same number or more, and they don't cost nearly that. Then, yeah, this was an indulgence. Jim Henson coming out really as a new age hippie, I feel like. He was like, I'm going to show you a side of me you haven't seen. And in the 80s, maybe a lot of people, certainly parents that were protective of their kids seeing scary things with violence, they said, no thanks, Jim.
And I kind of feel some of this is Jim Henson looking at what Frank Oz did with Yoda in Empire Strikes Back and is like, we could tell serious stories with these things?
It 100% is, Arnie. I've read articles about that, how Empire was a major influence on getting the direction for the Dark Crystal. I got some news to drop about Yoda at the end of this podcast relating it to the Dark Crystal, but yeah, that was definitely a big part of it.
And I did not realize that Frank Oz gets a co-directing credit on this movie. I think of it always as, from Jim Henson. Jim Henson, he's synonymous with anything with the Muppets in the 80s. But no, this is Frank Oz's first directorial credit. He, of course, would go on to do Little Shop of Horrors and a lot of things without puppets. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, What About Bob Bowfinger? But yeah, here, I think what it was Jim Henson knew, because he was also puppeteer of Jen, he was going to need some help. And the way that they collaborated was that Jim Henson thought a lot about camera movement, and he let Frank Oz be the one to think about character and how you get the personality out of the puppets. And they're both behind, the scenes working. I think Frank Oz did a lot more with sort of the supporting characters like Aga and Chamberlain. And of course, he's also collaborating with Brian Froud, who we mentioned when we covered the movie Labyrinth. Remember in summer of 1986, we talked about all the sci-fi coming out at that time? Well, that was Jim Henson and Brian Froud's second collaboration, trying to correct the damage that Dark Crystal had done to their reputation.
Have David Bowie, the King of the Goblins, stealing babies and seducing teenage girls? That was his correction for the Dark Crystal?
Well, I do think, just starting out, you mentioned David Bowie. Like, they had people in it. Whereas this movie,
no people in this.
It was bragging that it was, maybe the first? Certainly the biggest movie to ever not feature a human being.
Well, not a human face. There's definitely some shots where it's little people with puppet heads on, like for some walking shots and that.
Oh, yeah. I could tell when there were humans in far shots moving.
A number of the little people from one of my favorite movies, Time Bandits, from around the same time, like get to be Jen and Kira, but with a head on.
Sure, but you're not supposed to know that.
And if you haven't listened to our review of Labyrinth, though, this is why I was dreading returning to this movie that Rob wanted us to review, because long story short, I wasn't a big fan of Labyrinth.
Yeah, and I don't know how strong of fans we were. We liked the art direction. That was my main appeal. Like, it was just kind of a cool world to be in and look at, even though the story maybe wasn't the strongest.
Yeah, I mean, it was an 80s Alice in Wonderland, and good enough. I mean, it had enough admirable moments that I could overlook what were some obvious shortcomings. And I do think that Brian Froude, what he brings to it as an illustrator, was he really helped Jim Henson conceive outside of the Muppets. Obviously, it still has some of the sensibilities of the Muppets, but it definitely gets more into the fantasy realm. Brian Froude had done an illustrated book on fairies in the 70s, and he was just much more in touch with folklore and myth. And so he kind of makes Henson move in that direction where he's thinking more about Grimm's fairy tales and less about Sesame Street.
Yeah, you talk about Henson coming out as a hippie. I watched, well, it's probably talk about it at the end, but I watched the making of feature on Netflix for Age of Resistance, which is the Netflix series that's a prequel to The Dark Crystal. And Froude was still around for that. And that dude, like, wow, you want to talk about pretension? Which, look, when you get into art, you're going to get pretension. But like, yeah, he's like, when I draw a line, like if I'm drawing a mystic, it's got to be a very natural line and it just moves. I don't control it. I'm like, oh, this is some hippie shit here.
Yeah, and that might have been part of the struggle too, was it was hippie shit in the age of the yuppie in the 80s, and maybe this would have been a bigger hit if it had come out in the 70s.
This is such a 70s film.
It does feel like a 70s, like right after that Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Perfect double feature here. But that wasn't what we were vibing on in Christmas time, no less, 1982. But it stayed with me. I had seen this movie one other time in my 30s. I did go back just to go, is it as weird as I remember? And the answer was, yep, it certainly was.
Yeah, because I was looking at David O'Dell is the one credited with writing this.
Not George Lucas or J.R.R. Tolkien?
No, the J.R.R. Tolkien may have been owed a royalty check. But, you know, there are three movies that when I think of, I just think of not quite gelling, supernatural type of storytelling and a little bit fantasy. Dark Crystal, Supergirl, and Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, to be fair, David O'Dell did start working on The Muppet Show, which had just come to an end. So naturally, Jim Henson, it's his story. He developed a 25-page story called The Crystal, and then he passed it along to this Muppet Show writer. And yes, this Muppet Show writer decided he would stay in the fantasy genre, much less successfully with those later films. I don't know that they're all equally on the same level of artistic failure, Arnie. I mean, Masters of the Universe? Yeesh.
I'm just saying that in all of them, it felt like they didn't gel tonally, all three of those movies. Dark Crystal, Supergirl, Masters of the Universe. Tonally, they're off. They all have this darkness and this mysticism to them.
I don't know. This is called The Dark Crystal, and it is dark as hell.
Yeah, I don't feel like this movie's tonally off. Now, you could be repelled by it, but I don't feel like we can talk about it. I guess that's why we're here. It would be interesting for someone to make the argument that this movie failed to do what it set out to do. It's easier to make the argument, I don't want to do what this movie is asking me to do, and I don't want my kids to do it either. But let's find out. Arnie, give them the plot, and we can get into The Dark Crystal.
Shall I just read the 5 minutes of opening narration at the beginning of the movie? Or?
That it tells you three times in a row.
Yeah. It covers a lot.
It's been 1,000 years, and you're going to be told that like 3 or 4 times just in the first 10 minutes.
First 10 minutes felt like it was 1,000 years.
And by the way, Jim Henson hated the fact that they were using the word years because three suns. We define years as 365 days around one sun.
That's why they don't say it in the Netflix series. They have some weird made-up word for their years.
Yeah, that prologue was a concession when his ideas weren't coming through. Someone came in and said, nope, we need to just tell people right off the bat.
Well, in this fantasy tale, there's a desolate world. It was once a lush paradise until a magical giant crystal cracked and a shard was lost. In the wasteland that followed, the world became ruled by the evil Skeksis. In the 1,000 years that have now passed, there are only 10 Skeksis left. Far from the Skeksis live the gentle mystics, but they too have been dying off. When the evil Skeksis ravaged a Gelfling village, the leader of the mystics took in an orphaned Gelfling boy named Jen. When the movie starts, that wisest of mystics is dying, and his last wish is for Jen to fulfill the prophecy to heal the crystal. The Skeksis are also in a bit of disarray as their emperor has died, and a new leader, General Skekung, has taken the throne. But the Skeksis know that they will lose power if the crystal is healed, so they send their Garthrim warriors to kill Jen. Jen finds an astronomer named Agra, who has the missing crystal shard. Jen gets the shard, but barely escapes before the Garthrim capture Agra. Jen then encounters another Gelfling named Kira, and Kira joins him on his journey to the castle where the Skeksis worship the Dark Crystal. Kira is captured to have her life essence drained to restore youth to the new Skeksis Emperor, but Jen leaps onto the crystal and places the shard in the divot, fulfilling the prophecy. But Kira is stabbed by a Skeksis as Jen does this. When this happens, the Mystics and the Skeksis merge into one being. As each Skeksis died, so did a Mystic, and vice versa. Before the crystal was broken, these two races were one, and with the crystal restored, they are one again. They bring Kira back to life as thanks for Jen's heroism, and then the species leave the planet as credits roll. And no, I didn't take any shrooms before this. But I think the filmmakers might have.
Yeah, it's probably good if you didn't. You might go on a bad trip. I mean, this could really give you some nightmare juice when you get into this movie. But yeah, you mentioned this is a different planet. That was one thing they wanted to emphasize right off the bat. This wasn't Earth. It's got three suns, whole different mythology. They wanted people to understand, well, you know, it may have some application to Earth. There might be some metaphor we can extract about life and death. But in the end, we're going to a whole different realm. Divorced from humanity. And again, that's the big gambit. No humans in this at all.
Yeah, and I've argued in the Wally, like, would that be better if he never got off of her? Then it was just that silent film that's so great at the beginning, you know, the first 30 minutes or whatever, that is a risk. I feel, unless you're going to do Homeward Bound with a cute dog and cat, like, then people, or at least kids, will watch that. But it is a risk to not have a human face, and we'll have some human-like creatures, but they're felt. Like, everything's a puppet.
Yeah. That was the thing that I thought was remarkable about it when I was a kid. And it is maybe the sticking point for people that are looking for performance. Because I think we're used to, even in a Muppet movie, you got James Coco or Liza Minnelli or David Bowie or somebody's going to come in there and they're going to be your focal character. And even that role is going to be played by Jen, the, I don't know, what would you call him? Kind of a horse face elf?
Yeah.
Yeah, he looked like kind of a human with a little bit of a horse face.
Yeah, you got those ears that poke out.
But come on, evil is always more interesting than good. Before we talk about him or any of the Mystics, let's talk about the thing that everyone remembers when they see the Dark Crystal, the Skeksis.
The 10-minute monologue at the beginning? Dear frickin' Lord.
Let me address this because, look, I came out during the Chronicles of Riddick. I'm like, forget this D&D dice rolling movie with all their different rate. Like, I do have a bias against fantasy. I've stated that. I give Lord of the Rings a pass because I got a connection to it because my dad worked on that Bakshi film and it's just something I grew up with, but I'm not generally a fantasy person, and I got to listen to the prophecies and 10,000 years ago this happened. Like, here's the thing with this one though. We're going to be told the same origin story in this opening. This may be why it takes 10 minutes, like three times, but each time it's like a different beat. And again, I get into the hippie vibe of this film. Like, this feels like poets on bongos sitting in a drum circle. It's about the spirituality of it, about the dualism. And so every time they retell that origin story, it's about what's going on. Is it scary vultures or these gentle mystics? Like, they're recontextualizing that myth over and over as they tell it like three times in a row. So I end up like getting into it because I'm like, oh, that, again, you said this was a conceit, or maybe the fact that you just used the word years was a conceit. But again, voiceover and legend, usually that stuff I get repelled by, but because they push it the way they do and contextualize it the way they do, I don't know. I want to join the drum circle.
Oh my God, I'm the exact opposite. It almost became like a joke because there was this opening monologue, another world, another time, the Skeksis gather, blah, 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 blah. And then there's a pause and I'm like, all right, I don't like the data dumps at the beginning, especially read like this, but you know, maybe they're trying to do a Star Wars thing and you don't have to read. Okay. Then he keeps going. Today, once more, they gather the girl. I'm like, okay, there's more. All right, all right. And then they pause again. I'm like, all right, well, now we're finally, 1,000 years ago, the crystal, oh my freaking God, I couldn't believe it. It was like an Andy Kaufman thing going on here. And truthfully, I swear to God, if it wasn't for now playing, if I just turned this on to see, like, what do I think of Dark Crystal? Let me turn this on. I would have turned it off before this monologue ended. I really was that turned away by this nonsensical. And for now playing, I'm like rewinding it, typing it out. I'm like, I gotta.
You gotta write down every word three times.
I have to understand the sketches, and I have to understand everything that's going on here. And by transcribing it, I got it, and it did help me understand the rest of the movie, but man, that's a bad way to do it.
No, that was my question. It was like, are they leaning on a crutch they don't need? Should they be able to tell their story without this? When you consider the fact that it's young kids, I don't know. Here's what I'll tell you. For my theatrical viewing, I actually showed up to the theater late. I remember I came in, and all of the mystics were chanting, so I kind of missed some of this. And I don't know, I still kind of understood the movie on some kind of level. It ended up making sense to me. So I don't feel like you need to hammer in all of these themes at the beginning, but maybe it's helpful to set the idea that what we're watching is myth. And obviously that's the big thing they're stressing here, is that this is a parable about evil coming into the world and going out.
See, and I don't know, you say for kids, what kids could follow this 10 minutes of monologue?
Is it that long for real?
I don't know if it's 10 minutes, but I look, I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, okay, they're saying those same words again. Like, I realized what they were doing.
Honestly, I didn't notice it.
It is very long. It might be only 6 minutes, but it is much longer than it needs to be. And I don't think kids could follow it, because without rewinding and transcribing, I couldn't follow it.
Yeah, but as a kid, it wasn't about 1,000 years and that. It was about what it looks like. And when we see these Skeksis in the opening, like, we're told they're dying off and they're staring at that crystal with the purple rays going into their eyes. Like, this is how they're keeping themselves alive. Like, this is what spoke to me as a kid. Like, this is stuff I've remembered. Guys, this movie is 38 years old. That means I'm older than that, and I refuse to believe it, but, like, this is stuff that stuck with me for 38 years because of these scary visuals of these Skeksis.
And that's what I would say, is that this voiceover rolls right off of me because I'm more entranced by the matte paintings and the sets and the amazing puppetry that totally holds up, that is as good now, like Blade Runner good, of like, yeah, I completely accept this exactly as it was 38 years ago now.
I agree. I think this is a gorgeous looking film. The vistas, the sets, all of it. The only thing I don't like is the main character, Jen, because he's a little marionette-ish in his facial expressions and his movements.
And Henson wasn't that happy with the Gelflings either that show up here.
I just expected him to at some point go, yodelady, 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 hee-hoo.
Swiss Miss.
It's because he kind of has a goat face, that's why.
And also the marionettes from Sound of Music.
Mm. Yeah, they were goats.
That's right. So I just kept having that in my mind. But other than just the way Jen moved and things, I think everything in this film is gorgeous. And yeah, the Skeksis are the highlight of it. But I don't know, some of the sky shots and the landscape shots are just incredible stuff.
Yeah, it pulls me in. I have no issue. Again, the voiceover, I don't know, it's there. But again, you can turn it off. You can just mute it and just watch the visual storytelling. And I think it comes through.
And I want to add, I'm watching the 4K remaster of this. And man, it is just gorgeous.
So, all right, what if Jen were a little boy? Could they have done it? Should they have done it? Should they have got a character in latex?
Tom Cruise.
Right.
Yeah, no, I was thinking Legend. I don't know. There's something, even though Jen doesn't look as good as the other puppets, I still think it's great how they're able to pull all this off. He doesn't look good, and neither does Kira. Again, they look kind of like they're felt. Their faces don't have a lot of movement. And when you see these mystics and Skeksis with all these wrinkles and warts and just so much detail, yeah, they're kind of bland looking. But I don't know. It helps me buy that Thra is just this other world. Like, there's nothing human there. It helps me buy into this fantasy world.
I think that's why I go with it.
Yeah, I don't want humans, but I don't want these puppets, you know?
Yeah.
I'd rather them go back to the well and bring out an animal or a Fozzie or something.
They're a little inexpressive, but it's not a huge problem for me. And
no.
Sometimes the tricks they use with, you're right, full-bodied little people actors where they're running around. I remember as a kid, I was like, how did they make a puppet do that? I don't see the strings. I mean, it was enchanting, and you just buy into the world. He's there playing his flute in the tide pool, and he gets the news that, you know what, every Disney character gets, right? Your parent is dead. You're now an orphan.
I mean, his parents are already dead, and now his adopted father's dying. Yeah.
Double dead. Your father figure is now on his deathbed and has really important things to say to you as he croaks about a crystal.
I'm now wondering, did Lucas rip this off with the wise master dying under the blanket, giving last words of wisdom, giving a mission?
Oh, it's definitely Yoda disappearing in Return of the Jedi. Wrote it down.
Yep, and then the being disappears and the cover falls. I'm like, oh, that is Return of the Jedi all over.
Yeah, and I think that might help people. I might help them bring into the world. It does feel as total as the Lucas Star Wars world. I do feel like with all the detail work and all that, I'm sucked in that way. But it's not necessarily emotional. I would stress that I don't feel a sadness for a child losing their master. We haven't had enough time with these people. It's sort of happening. And again, Jen, the puppet, is kind of inexpressive. But I am sucked in.
And yet I think that's kind of appropriate because this movie isn't about like that death is sad. It's that circle of life. It's that Lion King thing, but told in a much darker way, even though, you know, that death of Mufasa is pretty horrifying for a child probably, but this even more so. And it's just about, you know, good and evil. They have to take their turns. They both have to happen. There is something very hippie-ish, but also just very stoic about it. It's just like, you got to accept what's going to happen. That's how the world works.
It's a dialectic. Every time good leaves the world, so does a little bit of evil. And I remember that being one of the things I remembered from that viewing as a 9-year-old was that they'd always cut back to what the Skeksis were doing. And you see the Emperor dying on his bed at the same time that Jen's master is dying in his bed.
Can we talk about the Emperor dying? Like, again, nightmare fuel. Kids, you want to see a vulture just crumble into dust? My God, this film.
The Emperor himself looks like a skeleton Skeksis.
Yeah, they're already scary looking, and they're going to make it more scary.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like the skin has been ripped off of him, and he's just a skull. And
yeah, it's horrifying, and I think it's because we have a Grover voice going on that might be the one thing you hold on to, like, We have Skeksil, the Chamberlain, who's kind of the comedy relief amid all of this death. He's seeing this as an opportunity.
Yeah, he feels like the biggest character of the Skeksis, even though he's going to get outcast eventually and kind of become a golem. But he is the one that's always plotting behind the scenes. And I will say this. I can't imagine trying to do this. I can't imagine trying to do it now. They did it for Netflix. I wouldn't want to do it. This seems like awful work. Like, the fact that they have little monitors that they have to look at and react to what they're seeing on that monitor for their acting, it sounds like very tough work. I guess puppeteers, they have a passion. They make it work.
Yeah, and let's be clear. I believe all of this is being done before the voice actors get involved. The voice actors will have to match what the puppeteers are doing. The puppeteers are giving the performance, and the voice actors fill it in.
You're 100% right. I'm assuming this was done the same way as Age of Resistance. Again, in that making of, it's more focused on the Netflix series, but they had some of the voice actors. Simon Pegg does a voice in there. Mark Hamill does a voice in there. He doesn't show up for the making of, but Simon Pegg's there. Some of the other voice actors, and they said this is very different than typical voice acting work where you do all the sound recording first and then the animators animate to your performance. Here, the puppeteers get to choose the performance. They're the actors, and you got to match how they're moving their mouths and do all that timing. And if there's a pause, you don't get to make those decisions. It's up to the puppeteers.
Wow, that does seem like a hard performance to give.
Well, it's probably less fun for the actor, but everything is in service of this vision. Everything, even though, you know, Henson is only partially directing and sometimes puppeteering, but mixed up in other things, I do feel like it's his vision in the end, that everyone is working in service of trying to bring this very dark fairy tale to life. So Skeksil, the Chamberlain, he wants to be emperor. He's going to grab the scepter, but there's this other general guy.
Before the emperor even dies, he tries to grab that thing.
Yeah, the general wants in on it. So it's got to be a trial by stone. And for a second, I actually believe we're going to get a movie where Muppets take swords to one another.
Oh, and I thought it was going to suck so bad because when they grab those swords, they clang them once and I'm like, oh, they can't do this right. And there's a stone right there. I'm like, what is a trial by stone if it's a sword fight? But no, it's just who can break the stone with the sword first. It's kind of, I want the Skeksis to be more violent than that.
I mean, I will say this about the film, because I got a lot of praise for the art direction and just the craft that goes into it. The Skeksis, I think we're going to get a 3-minute scene of them just eating. It does feel like once we got our puppets like in place to do something, like we just got to do that for a while, because it's really hard to set up another scene and to probably do action, which you would expect in a fantasy, and just to be more dynamic, like you would expect even an animated film, but especially a live action one to be. It does feel like, yeah, we got to hit a rock, and that's going to be our trial to see who gets to take over as an emperor.
And maybe there's a part of the adult you that wants more violence and more, but this is plenty harsh. Again, PG-rated Muppet movie already has some parents keeping their kids home. It's Fraggle Rock on meth, and that's not for everyone. I don't think this is a kid's movie, and I think that should be emphasized. Just because Jim Henson's name is on it doesn't mean you should bring your wee ones to it.
I actually read Fraggle Rock came out of this. They were going to have little minor people in this.
Okay, here's the thing. You're 100% right, because you got these podlings. We're going to find out they're sucking their essence to try to live longer. Those podlings, you could tell I was a big Henson fan. I'm not kidding. They very much look like the Doozers. Now, what was the deal with the Doozers? They lived with the Fraggles. They loved building stuff. The Fraggles loved eating radishes. So the Doozers would just build all these structures with radishes, and then the Fraggles would just come and eat them all and tear them down. And then they got to build more stuff. Again, that's a lighter version mm-hmm. of what we're seeing here with the dialectic, but it's there.
Yeah. And again, if this were Fraggle Rock, I probably wouldn't be as into it.
Yeah.
I appreciate the fact that it is a very dark crystal, even though, yeah, they're beating on stones and not each other. And Chamberlain, of course, is going to lose because, you know, he's not a general.
And when Chamberlain loses, they go, I guess they just strip all his robes off. Nightmare fuel. Like having to see these Skeksis with no clothes on is scary. Just the way they attack him.
I thought they were dismembering him.
That's how it feels.
I thought they were ripping his skin off.
And metaphorically, they are. I mean, again, I think what I remember reading, I read the novelization. I read a lot in order to prepare for this. And now my head is kind of exploding from, I don't know where I got all of the information. But my memory is that he wears a coat from everyone that he's defeated or, you know, killed in some way. And so, like, yes, by being stripped of all of this, it's like taking away someone's whole medals. All those coats made him feel proud to be who he was. And now he's a scrawny chicken that no one wants to have around. It feels very humbling and sad.
And I kind of thought that would be the end of him, or that he would turn against the other Skeksis. Like he would be a friendly Skeksi, but that's not where the story is going.
Oh, no, he goes full Gollum.
Yeah, he's angling always. He's an enterprising individual. And so he'll work on a plan for a comeback while the Dark Crystal is turning into a television set. You know, that was a time when we were really warning kids, don't watch TV. So like the fact that it literally is like a television set felt like some kind of messaging. It's reporting back. Well, they have these crystal bats and they can fly around with the Dark Crystal chips and kind of film whatever's going on. They're reporting that Jin is now on his quest. He is heading towards them in the castle. And that's bad because the prophecy states that the Gelfling will kill all of the Skeksis.
Yeah, all these Gelflings were supposed to be gone. They were supposed to all be eliminated. We're told at some point that they're draining the essence from these podlings, but I guess their essence just isn't good enough. You need that good Gelfling juice. That's what helped them live, and I guess they destroyed them all.
Yeah, I guess it was, you know, that's how you protect yourself, right? If, like, prophecy says this creature will kill me, then I'll make sure that not a single one of those creatures exists. But it was spared by the mystics. We'll get his backstory a little bit further. In the meantime, the Skeksis are going to send out their henchmen, which I just adore.
These crabs?
Gartham, yeah.
I thought they were giant roaches.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like beetles, crabs, something. And again, part of the fun, like, is being able to see the strings, is being able to see the man behind the curtain doing the magic. And just looking at this, like, I look at the Skeksis, I'm like, oh, so someone's, like, got their hand up and in that head and has got to have their hand up the whole time. And these Gartham are, like, you can kind of see, like the way the puppeteers are moving inside of there. I don't know. It part of like the magic of this is the artificiality and just being able to be amazed by how they're pulling this off. And then just the creativity and the art direction and the design and the world they have built.
Yeah, it's not artificial in the way like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers would be, like,
no.
Or Ultraman. You know, we've seen Man in Rubber Suit. It's not the same feeling, but I agree with you. Sometimes you see the seams, but never am I taken out. Like, I feel like it's just part of the world. It helps, too, that I saw some of the behind-the-scenes footage, And my mind is just blown about the way that these puppeteers contort themselves to get in these suits. It's just crazy.
Yeah, crazy.
But Jen has been told that he has to follow the biggest son. There are three, but the greatest son for one day. And by following that trajectory, he winds up at the planetarium of Agra.
This is a short movie. It's 93 minutes. And I thought that this would be a quest for the shard. The fact that by 25 minutes in, he's at Agra's and she's like, all right, here's a bunch of shards. And he's like, oh, it's this one. I'm like, wow, that was easy.
Yeah, but I think the point is, because he is raised by mystics probably, and as he's trying to identify the shard, you see these mystics start doing this like Gregorian chant. And, you know, the thing about crystals, they vibrate. And, you know, I took this as because he is raised by them, he knew, oh, I got to use music. I got to use art or creativity. It's not these weird mechanical creatures or things that the Skeksis would use. Science. You know, I hate it when science is villainized, but that's kind of how this plays out. But the fact that he's going to pull out his little flute and play that same frequency that the mystics are chanting or humming or whatever they're doing and be able to identify it. And that the crystal identifies itself. It recognizes that vibration for whatever reason. Again, I don't think there's a whole lot of whys told in this film. Like, it's kind of left to your imagination, but that's how I take it. And again, this film is hippie AF and I want to get in that drum circle.
So, I mean, to your point, Arnie, I agree with you. The middle of the movie, it seems to flounder a little because, in fact, Jin doesn't understand what he's supposed to do. It's a quest, but he doesn't know anything more than that. He knows that it involves a crystal, and he knows he has to go to meet this Agra person, and he has no other information beyond that. Is that fair of the mystics? I mean, should they have better prepared him for this? Would it be stronger as a storyline if he was heading to the castle the whole time?
Isn't that always the way with these kind of things? Again, I think about Yoda. Like, he's never going to give you a straight answer. It's always going to be a riddle because that's going to make you have to struggle and figure it out and grow and solve it.
You have to confront Vader. I think that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, but then he's like, don't go save them. The future's cloudy. I don't know what's going to happen, but you got to finish your training. Like, he contradicts himself.
I just also want to say Agra is just kind of a cool creature and atypical. You would think something this ugly that plucks out its eyeballs and holds it up in his talons.
Love it.
Yeah, you would think that this is going to be something to fight.
I thought so.
And that this movie resists the urge to demonize ugly.
Yeah, that again, watching this as an adult, because as a kid, I don't know, at 6 years old, I was probably just very accepting to go on this journey and, you know, whatever's presented to me. Now, 38 years later, I've got all these biases and prejudices and opinions. And, you know, I've watched decades of movies now, and I know if it's ugly, it's probably a bad thing. And so, yeah, that is, again, a pleasant surprise here, is that they're going to try to move away from those cliches. And again, get back to that. It's a circle of life. That ugly things can be good. Good things can be ugly. All over the place.
I've read some of the supplemented material that came much later, but was tied to notes that Henson wrote. And Agra really is like the first being of this planet Thra. That she really was there before anything else, and that she watched over the crystal. Like, that was her job. It was just her and the crystal, no other life. And then what happened, happened.
Yeah, in Age of Resistance, you kind of find out that the Skeksis, they fooled her to get that crystal. And so she definitely has, again, in this film, you're not going to get any backstory. You might get a lot of exposition, but I don't feel like that's going to help you understand these characters' backstory more. But they were all there, whether they couldn't film it or it wasn't in the script, I don't know. But these are deep characters when you get into the supplemental material.
She just kind of works as a hermit that, again, like, she would be just fine forever watching the universe swirl around in this giant mechanical planetarium contraption. I just kind of love the fact that it's just...
Which is amazing looking.
Her and her device, just hypnotized by what, you know, she's talking about as the Great Conjunction. That all three suns are going to be coming in alignment, just like it was 1,000 years ago when the crystal cracked, means something epic is about to happen. An end of the world or a beginning?
Yeah, she doesn't know. It could be good. It could be bad. She doesn't know. Like, and again, typically in a kid's fantasy, it's you're going to do a good thing. Like, there is maybe reuniting that shard with the crystal is a bad thing. Who knows what's going to happen at this conjunction, especially with this movie that has been so scary thus far. Like, really have no idea how they're going to spin this.
But when you hear that maraca sound, you know something bad is about to happen. This is the Gartham noise. Their approach is that little clattering sound. And before you know it, they've torn down this whole planetarium and Jin is on his way. And
again, good effects there with the tearing down of the planetarium, the fire and everything. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah. Again, desolation. I mean, usually Wizard of Oz, you're making friends. Come along with me. Help me along the way. Nope. You're going to be alone. Nothing. It burns to the ground and you still don't know what to do with the shard. Like there's just a sense of hopelessness and despair that permeates this, that makes it hard to be it's not a road of self-discovery. I'll put it that way. It doesn't feel the same as Alice in Wonderland or Wizard of Oz.
No, as much as I feel like this, look, Star Wars, that was tapping into Campbellian themes anyway. But if you try to compare this to those Campbellian themes, like, I don't think this is really a hero's journey. Like, does Jen ever deny the call? Like, that's a big, important part of the hero's journey. This, again, if I'm looking at just the basic story structure, not the strongest thing, but there's so many other things. Like, they're not living up to what I would expect a child's fantasy film to be doing. They're making it darker. They're, you know, the ugly thing is a good thing. Like, so there's a lot of other stuff going on where I don't get so hung up on the straight story failures that might maybe happening.
But it makes Jen maybe a little bit boring. Like he's just more reactionary.
Oh, no, I agree. Jen is not the most exciting thing.
You know, it probably works for him since he doesn't have a reactionary face, but it does feel like, I mean, he reminds me of my young self when I started asking questions about life expectancy and death. And all. It just feels like a small child creeping up to the adult world and saying, oh, what is life? What is death? Starting to ask the big questions. I was that age. So again, all of this kind of worked for me. But maybe as a hero's journey, it's less successful.
Yeah, he's really bland. He's the least interesting thing in the movie, and yet he's the protagonist and supposedly the main character. I'm always more excited when there's somebody else on screen.
Like Fizgig?
Yeah, that was a strong memory I had. I remember there being this cute little thing that like gets super scary really, really fast. He's reaching into that little cave and out come those three sets of jaws.
And it is owned by another Gelfling, Kira. And you guys did the supplemental material. Was it ever intended that these two were going to be siblings? Because the fact that they're both kind of orphans and they have different backstories, but both of them come from tribes that were all murdered. It felt to me like they could have been brother and sister and they were just rescued by different people.
Well, there are 7 different clans of Gelfling, as I learned in Age of Resistance. Like some live under the ground, some live in the mountains. So I don't think they're related.
I think the idea was to keep it as simple as possible. I don't remember, again, Henson is not forthcoming about what was in his original 25-page story. And so I don't know. If it's out there, I didn't come in contact with it. What's more important is that they have this ability to share their memories by dream fasting. And yeah, they have similar stories. They're both survivors of genocide. The Gartham came in and choked Kira's mother's dead. We get to see that. Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Earning its PG rating.
The 80s were crazy, guys.
Jin is definitely the winner here because he gets picked up by the mystics and he's being taught languages and math and all of that.
Yeah, Kira had to like just live in a tree.
You learn, talk to flowers and hope they talk back. Yeah.
Well, that is the thing. She is, you know, she's not a mystic, but she is in tune with nature. We'll see Jen like fall into this swamp and he's sinking and she'll sing a song and some weird swamp creature will pop up from the water and lift him up. Like she is able to communicate with nature.
Yeah, it reminds me of like Miyazaki and sort of just the Japanese anime instinct.
Yes.
Shinto, really, about just being characters that tend to be very much connected to nature and not seeing a big difference between plant, animal, mineral. Like, we'll just talk to whoever. They're all my friends. But for Americans, that's weird.
And we kind of got that in Labyrinth, too, with the talking to the animals. So, repeated themes, I see.
So she is not on a quest. She is happily a part of a village of podlings, which are these, what would you call them, sock puppet-like people? They seem simple.
Yeah, they just have kind of round heads, not a whole lot. Almost look like worms crossed with people or something. I don't know. Like, their faces are wrinkled but round and plump.
My sense is that they have limited things to offer her, that she's smarter than them, and they, you know, let her hang out, and they'll dance around and sing, but
yeah, their essence isn't as good, so I guess Gelflings are better. Like, we're doing some Tolkien-style racism between the different races here. Like, the Podlings, like, the Skeksis will drain their essence and drink it, but it's not helping them out that much.
It wasn't as good as Gelfling juice. Yeah, I definitely feel like by them now sending out the roaches to collect these people and drain these people, it's getting more desperate. And you can feel that. I mean, it's even said in the prologue that everything is dying. Even the Skeksis that are alive, that, you know, the Emperor, they'll soon be following him into the beyond because the crystal is not restoring them to the same level of power. It would be interesting to see. I don't think we ever do what they look like in full youthful vitality. You know, like if they had all the essence they needed, would they actually be good looking birds? I don't know. Maybe.
I think they've always looked like that since they split apart from the Mystics.
Yeah, that's kind of my thinking as well, is it was a bifurcation of personality and these are the evil half and...
Yeah, it's a twin scenario. These are the Danny DeVitos to the Mystics Arnold Schwarzeneggers.
At any rate, we make it Akira's clan's house so that we can have some levity, some dancing.
Some levity and then more death.
Yes, and then quickly just take that all away, enter Garthums and have them, well, at least not choking people. Now they're putting them in baskets and hauling them back to the Dark Castle.
And you also, the Garthum almost do get Jen and Kira at this point, but this is where Chamberlain shows up. Like, we find out he's been creeping along and he's stopping Garthum from chasing him and attacking him, and because, yeah, he's always plotting.
Yeah, what can he do?
My precious!
Yeah, knowing that there are Gelflings alive, how can I use this to my advantage? The wheels are turning, and eventually he's going to proposition them. But yes, do they notice? Do they see him protect them as they're escaping? I'm not sure.
I thought they did.
They do one time. Not the first time from Agra, but yeah, this time they did after the Podlings village get attacked.
Okay. And they also make it to some other ruins, and this is where they figure out what they need to do with the shard. On the wall, there's hieroglyphics, and they can tell that this dark crystal is in fact the crystal of truth that needs to be healed. By Gelfling hand or else by none.
Which is mumbo jumbo, but the crystal of truth needs healing. Yeah, a little too hippie for me.
I mean, it's simple. It's easy. Like, yeah, heal it and everything's going to turn good. But in some ways, this is a kid's movie. Like, it would be my kid's movie. Like, this is the kind of stuff I would want to show them.
It's a fable.
Yeah.
Which is usually told at a campfire to young people. I don't know that middle-aged people tell themselves these kinds of stories. It is the kind of story that you tell young people to help them understand the greater world. So in that way, it's for kids. But I don't know, you're recoiling from crystals, just the imagery itself. You don't like New Age stuff.
Healing the crystals and things, it's a little bit too simplistic and hand-wavy. And like Jacob had said about himself earlier, fantasy is not my genre. You're not going to endear me by talking to me about 1,000 years ago, these races appeared, and now you have to go heal the crystal. I much prefer taking the ring to Mount Doom.
But I do think of Star Wars as a fantasy movie. So it's, I mean, and your favorite movie is a fantasy movie. You can be convinced.
I can be, but it's a hard sell. It is. It helps if you have laser bolts and robots.
I mean, maybe because I'm really into Jungian theory about the collective unconsciousness and the animus, like we are two beings, like if you're a man, you're like trying to discover your female side. Like, I don't know what psychiatrists do with that. Like, I know he was a psychiatrist, but I think it's some neat ideas that I like to explore. And so, yeah, maybe you got some things that are a little obvious, like crystals, but there's so much more to this world that I'm really getting into, like the dream fasting, like the dialectic going on and the two beings split apart. And the one being split apart into two and all of that. Like, I could give it its little crystal thing. It doesn't bug me.
And the dream fasting, I didn't even understand the purpose of. It gave us their backstory. But if they aren't siblings, why do I need to know this?
Well, because we find out what happened to their race. I don't think we had been told to this point. There just seems like there's this one Gelfling Jen walking around. Hey, what happened to his people? Why has he got to live with the Mystics? I think this is where we're finally told. Or at least shown. We're told he's the last of his kind, but this is where we're shown and receive the horror of what happened.
Right. And Chamberlain comes back. This is where he's literally just going to suggest that I'll take you to the castle. And I think, I mean, it looks like Jen is tempted. I think it's only because of Kira getting bad vibes that they end up taking Landstriders instead.
Oh my gosh, the thing, I was obsessed with this. As after I saw this film, it was like the number one memory. I'm like, oh yeah, there's these like rabbits with giant legs. And I remember there being a high-speed chase. That does not happen in this film. There is no high-speed chase, but it's still great looking.
It is.
Their whiskers, their ears are like on their shoulders. I don't know if they're ears, but they look like rabbit ears. Like just the design. Again, I don't know if they're cute. They're kind of repulsive looking, but they sound like tauntauns and I love them.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm falling in love with these creatures, but I'm definitely captivated by them. It's dark. I mean, I think that's the response. You're talking about like crystals and new agey, and is that a little too much? I don't think you could accuse this movie of being too sappy. I mean, like there's just something at its core.
Oh, there's no sentimentality in this thing.
Yeah, no sentimentality to it.
No, not sappy. Just overly simplistic with the overused storyline.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, I think I would be in your shoes if I felt like this was pandering, let's all sing kumbaya and hold hands, but like at no point does it not feel like this dismal, scary death tone poem. And so like that to me, it gave this sort of an authenticity and a reverence that I don't know, few films made for children ever get. I didn't have a problem then or now with the simplicity of the quest itself. It does feel like more should probably happen before they get to the castle.
Yeah, this is where I feel like this is the limits of puppets in 1982. Like there's no computers you could spruce them up with or, you know, do a flip with, you know. I guess you could put a puppet head on someone and have them try to do a flip. But again, whenever you get those cutaways, they look so unnatural. I'm glad they don't do some gen fight where it's actually a little person in a costume. Like that would really take me out of it. So I get it. They can't do that because of the medium they've chosen.
Yeah, before you know it, they're right there at the front gates. And my God, these land striders you love are suddenly just being knocked down, devoured.
My wife was so upset by this. Like, yeah, when all those Gartham like tackle that one and she was upset by it.
How could you not be? It's just disturbing. And it's only because Kira has wings that Jen gets away.
I like Jen. I don't have wings.
It's because you're a boy. Sexist. Those sexist biology of the Gelflings.
Meanwhile, it's probably worth noting that the Mystics have decided it's time. They've known all along that they were going to make a pilgrimage to the castle as well. They just let Jen get a head start.
I feel like they needed the head start. They are slow. They should have left like a year ahead.
Yeah, they always cut away to them whenever they need to do that. Like just a transitional scene. Where let's just cut back to them and see them like just poking along. I don't think they sleep is the thing. They don't need to sleep so they can just keep going like tortoise, you know, slow and steady winning the race.
I was noticing that both their leaders died at the same time. And then we're going to see one of the Sketsies die. And then we cut to the Mystics and one of them just
get stabbed. Just get his hand stabbed. And then the other one's hand will be bleeding.
Yeah, Jen takes that shard to the Chamberlain.
But later on, one dies and then a Mystic just bursts into flames. So it drives that point home that they are one.
Yeah, no, but I think you need that. And again, that is my memory of the movie. That is the moral of the movie. I mean, if the movie is about anything at all, it's about the unification, the dialectic nature of what we call good and evil as being one thing. I mean, I don't want to overstate it because it's so obvious, but I mean, it's a great way of showing that.
Yeah, and again, from the maker of Sesame Street Muppets and the Muppet Show, like, yeah, for us, it's done simplistically, but as a kid, like, it blew me away.
You talk about the influence this might have had on the Return of the Jedi. I also think that the Temple of Doom writers probably took something from this when we actually get Skextek, the Skeksis scientist, and we actually see him take those podlings, strap them down, and make them watch the purple reflection of the crystal.
As their life is sucked out, you see him shrivel up. Like, again, horror.
Oh, totally.
The milking of the being, and then the drinking of the life essence. The shriveling effects were very cool, and the unshriveling as well.
Yeah, horrifying. One of my most vivid memories. Again, these are the things I take away from the movie from that watching so long ago, was just all the torment and the torture and just seeing these, adorable little like troll dolls suddenly just be like rotted to nothing. They don't die. It's worth pointing out they're kept alive to be the servants. So I guess the concession that's made is they're not drained of so much life that they expire. They walk around and become slaves.
I mean, someone's got to bring the Skeksis that awful-looking food that they gorge themselves on.
Yes, exactly. And at this point, Agra has been dragged there as well, that the Garthum have mistaken her for a Gefling. They don't know what they're supposed to be getting. They are stupid creatures. You can tell them that. So everyone's sort of coming to the castle. We're getting to that climax.
But it's teased that Gelfling juice is the best juice for restoring life. So that's the added complication once we see that this other being's juice didn't quite work out.
Yeah, Chamberlain knows this. He's smart. He's probably the smartest one. And so he's going to, when he sees Kira and Jin mucking about, sneaking into the castle and the fountain, that he's going to try to take them and sell them off to regain his status, get his robes back. And if we hated seeing the podlings be drained, I mean, the fact that Kira is going to get it and like her eyes throughout the rest of this movie, her like she's going to have dark circles under her eyes, like this will permanently scar her face.
I didn't notice that. I just didn't realize the subtlety in the puppet face.
Oh, no. Yeah, this takes a toll when she gets strapped down and she's made to look at the dark crystal. And it's only because Agra yells at her that she has that animal power. And there's a lot of other caged animals. Use that and you can start a mutiny. They'll free you. That's when the scientist dies. You know, he actually gets pushed down into the lava and cut back to the mystic. That's when he burns up. Should Jin have more to do?
Yeah, he's like lying under a pile of rocks at this point.
Yeah, I feel like all the stuff that's happening, the most interesting stuff is being done by the supporting characters.
Well, I actually thought the twist was going to be that this prophecy, it wasn't Jin, that it was Kira. Like, because again, she's revealed she's got those wings and can fly. Jen's just sitting under a pile of rocks while she's, you know, having her life drained. I thought that might have been a twist, because I didn't remember exactly what happened with her, but maybe that would be the thing, is that the Gelfling was her, not Jin. He was just there to get the crystal so she could complete the mission.
That feels like a plot device they'd actually do now. Like, that would be how they do it if they were telling the story now. But no, Jin is going to, yeah, somehow, I think rocks fell on him. He wasn't able to be taken by Chamberlain. So he and Fizgig are going to kind of stumble their way through. You know, they end up in a cave full of Garthum and climb up the shaft. Eventually, they're going to end up in the chamber. And he is going to jump on the crystal and try to put the shard in just as the suns are aligning.
Yeah, before he gets to try to save the crystal, Fizgig is going to get kicked down that fiery pit. I couldn't believe that. I'm like, they just kill Fizgig? Like, whoa. Like, again, I've said this before. I'm not a real pet person, but I'm like, something about that Fizgig, I was upset. And then Kira gets killed.
Yeah, stabbed brutally and lingered. Like,
yes.
Usually, like, this stuff happens and you're like, oh, did she get stabbed? I'm not sure. Oh, no.
We talked about in Venom, which was PG-13, like, biting heads off. I'm like, were heads bit off? I never saw it. Like this? Yeah, you're going to see a little Gelfling just twitching there as she gets stabbed.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah, that was a bit shocking to me, too. She had done so much at this point, I was like, I didn't see this coming, and I didn't think this would be a movie with resurrection.
Right. But great convergences give you the opportunity to, yes, give the fairy tale ending where...
Yeah, Agra's able to save Fizgig. He was hanging on the ledge and she reaches out and saves him. And
it would be unforgivable if these characters actually died. Like, no way.
Oh, I was so upset with Fizgig. Like, I was really upset.
Yeah, no, there's no way that we would accept any of them die. Like, enough. It was enough that the Landstriders got it. Like, that is still hard. Like,
and again, it's so unceremonious. It's like, we're just going to kick this furball into a fire pit. Mm-hmm. Like... Again, no sentimentality, no like, oh, guys, we're going to pull out your heartstrings. It's like brutal death.
Right. So then we get the, you know, the point of it all, that we're all unified. The crystal has been restored and thus the two beings become one.
Yeah, remember when Yoda said if we could see with the Force that we're all luminous beings? Again, I feel like they're playing off of things Lucas came up with and then referencing it here as these Skeksis and mystics become, I don't know, these giant glowing ghosts with like branches coming out of their head. I'm not even sure. They don't look like a combination of the two races.
No, they don't, like anatomically. They seem to be something entirely new. And the crowns, I would call them crowns, it makes them look... kind of like the castle, really. They look like castle heads. Like,
yes.
They've even fused with the earth and the architecture. Like, when we said one, they become everything on Thrall.
Yeah, and this is called the Dark Crystal, but once it's healed, it becomes like a clear crystal, and the whole castle has become crystal at this point.
Yeah, it kind of feels like a 2001 ending, like a Kubrickian, like, let's just do something weird, and it's just kind of a popular thing to do. It's a big, dramatic flourish of an ending.
I was surprised by what the two species merge into, because what I had expected is it would be like a pretty version of the combination of the two. I didn't expect them to turn into rooks from a chessboard, but...
Arnie, there's nothing pretty here. We will never do pretty. When you think it's pretty, it's Fizzgig, and the little cute fuzzball, like, opens its mouth and bites you. Like, nothing's cute.
Yeah, Jen and Kira, as normal looking as it's gonna get.
But then they just kind of float away, which I thought, you know, I thought they'd be the gentle rulers of the planet. But no, they're just gonna leave, and now Jen and Kira, you're on your own. I guess repopulate your species. Go hump.
Yeah, the land is green again. Every time it showed us that great map painting of the castle, like everything was dead around it. Now there's rivers flowing and grass growing and Thra has been restored.
And the movie ends. There's not much after that. So Jacob Stewart, do you recommend The Dark Crystal? Jacob.
So here's the thing. Again, the story here, when you strip away the art direction and how this story would typically be done, I was thinking about, like, what if this was live action, like a live action fantasy film? It'd be pretty bad, probably. I'm thinking stuff I've seen on Mystery Science Theater 3000, like Wizards of the Lost Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
A Tour of the Fighting Eagle. Like, bad. Because this, again, with this storyline, it is so basic. There's a prophecy. The last of his race will defeat some bad guys and restore the world. Like, yeah, that's really basic. But despite that, it's because the way Henson and Oz and the writers and the puppeteers create this world, I get into it. I get over my bias of fantasy. I get over the fact that I hate stories about prophesied one that has to go on a mission and do something, because one, the darkness of this dark crystal like blew me away coming back to it. I'm impressed by it. And I've said this a few times before, like movies I grew up on, like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which is very twisted and dark and scary at times, and Time Bandits, like just films I loved as a kid, and watching them now, I can't believe my parents, knowing how religious they are and how much they would censor other media I watch, like let me watch these things that were dark and twisted. I think that's a good thing for kids. Let them know early that life is not Disney. It is not happily ever after. You need to learn some other lessons too. So to get into this weird dialectic of good and evil, I think that's a great thing to introduce them to. And I think The Dark Crystal is a great way to show them that. And the thing that told me that this really worked as a puppet show, like where I don't want people in it, like I'm watching this thing and I'm like, here's the next Henson film that I want. I want it all puppets. It's another fantasy. I wouldn't even be able to be on the review of the film on Now Playing because it would fall into another retrospective that I'm not on. But I'm like, I want them to do Legend of Zelda. Do that world. Do that movie, please. I want Zelda movies made by the Jim Henson Company. Like, because I watch this, I'm like, they're going to tell a story that's set in those fantasy worlds, but they got those twists and they're not going to play by those regular rules. Yeah, I want more. And we'll talk about it. We got some more. Like, but I was surprised how much I enjoyed this despite its shortcomings with maybe storytelling or expressions with the Gelflings. Yeah, this is a solid recommend. Watch The Dark Crystal.
Stuart.
You know, at some point, people probably don't believe it. Those are the things I like now. But I was a sweet kid. I liked innocent, light things. I had a teddy bear collection. I cried when E.T. came back to life.
And yet Alien's your favorite movie.
I watched The Smurfs with Arnie, you know, like, but then The Smurfs aired a very notorious episode about plague where a bug bites Hefty on the ass and suddenly everyone in the village is turning purple and leering and repeating gnap, gnap, gnap. I think it bit me that day. I don't know what happened, but after that viewing, I do think about, Jacob, what you talked about with Time Bandits and Secret of Nim and just even the kids' movies that I consumed, there was an attraction to the dark. And I don't know where that comes from. I'm a purple Smurf, maybe. And I'm not advocating that your child needs to be. I'm not saying you should like what I like. But if you do, I think you're really going to dig Dark Crystal. It's one long, really tortured Purple Smurf episode that is difficult to shake off. I mean, it will stay with you your whole life. Some of this imagery will be there when you close your eyes at night.
Again, since 6 years old, I have remembered certain images of this film.
And at its heart, I mean, I think it gets to the same thing that Lion King does. And you could like that. I mean, that's a happy, I mean, there's a little bit of dark, but like that is a Disney story. You can learn the morals of this movie in a lighter way if that's what you want to. But I like the scars. And I, again, I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing. Maybe you don't want to be scarred by a movie. but I appreciated this sensibility. I think Jim Henson and company really successfully bring it to life through their puppeteering. I agree. This could easily have looked like Bad Marionation or a Godzilla movie gone way haywire and be laughable. They brought another world to life, and I think it's a very strong Green Arrow.
And I can't remember my reaction to this as a kid beyond confusion. I don't recall being scared by it or put off by it. I think I was much more traumatized when Bambi's mother died to your Disney allegory, Jacob.
Spoiler!
It's the early scenes, you know? I mean, every animal's parent dies in a Disney film, you know? Lion King and all of them, so...
Yeah, do they just have giant cockroaches crawl on them, though, and eat them?
That's the extended cut you have to pay $30 on Disney Plus for. So I'm reviewing this basically as if I'd never seen it before. And what I can say is it's a genre that has to really work to excite me. And like the Fellowship of the Ring succeeded in that. The Hobbit films didn't really do that. And Stardust didn't.
Wow.
Well, don't bring up Stardust.
People love Stardust.
They're wrong.
They do, but yes, I don't know why.
And what I can say is, if this were a Peter Jackson film made today, and we had, you know, Elijah Wood or whatever as Jen, and Liv Tyler as Kira or something, and it was CGI for all of these animals and creatures and beasts.
I don't want it.
Then I'd have to rely on the story. And it would be a not recommend for the story. The story of this is pretty rote. It's pretty dull. I've heard it 1,000 times. A young boy has to fulfill a prophecy, go get this object, which he gets way too easily, and then take it to the destination and does it just in the nick of time. And then magical beings show up and say thank you. Not recommend for the story. But Jim Henson's team, Frank Oz's team, both of them bring an artistry to this. The score is really good. We haven't talked about it, but I really enjoy the music, especially during the climax of the film. And other than the Gelflings, this is a visually astonishing movie. The plot didn't hold my interest all that much. It didn't have to all that much. It's only a 90-minute movie. But for the visuals alone, yeah, I'm going to give this a recommend.
I agree with you, and I'm glad that you were able to see the positives, because I thought maybe you were having the biggest problem with this, but I do think there is, it's simple, but I mean, it's there. There is a story. It's a lesson that's told again and again, because it's something that culturally we value. Like, we have to face death in our lives. We have to see good and evil. So to see it in this elemental way, in this visually extravagant way, is a better way of experiencing it than just any old movie.
Right, but I'd prefer a twist on the storytelling, but compare this to its sibling, as I refer to it, Labyrinth, where you had some great visuals, but not all great visuals, and you had the live-action performers in there, and it didn't work for me. So, you know, I think that having a rote, oft-told story is better than trying to stretch and failing.
Yeah, no, it's better than Labyrinth. It's better than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which, again, Jim Henson had a hand in, so I got to throw it in there. Of all the Jim Henson projects we've looked at, this is by far.
Turtles have more facial expressions than Gelflings.
Well, okay then, Arnie. What I'm going to recommend then is, if you like the art direction here, but you wanted things not so cliche, more complicated, watch the Netflix series, Age of Resistance. Blew me away. The Gelflings, they have improved those faces. Like, that is the biggest improvement. Look, they stick with the puppets, but there are CGI enhancements. So they're able to make the faces look a little bit more lifelike, but it's still probably 80% puppets in that 10-hour series. And it is amazing. There are things that happen in that. Like, I don't even want to spoil stuff, but creatures that are traditionally just evil in Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, things like that. There is a twist to those creatures in this series that never seen it before. Like, I didn't see it coming.
They open it up. What's amazing is this story feels small, because really it's all about Jin and a few other people that compliment him. But in this one, they go for, like, Game of Thrones. Like, there are seven realms of Gelfling, and...
Yeah, if you want to talk about darkness, there's people dying every episode. Like, it is depressing. The Skeksis, like, this is where they come out as being corrupt, and it's horrifying. Like, it is even scarier than this little 90-minute thing. Like,
it out Purple Smurfs. There's a Purple Smurf scene with mind control that it freaked me out now.
Yes.
I mean, just, oh, ganap, ganap. But just to be clear, Age of Resistance is a prequel. So it builds into this movie. Even though it expands all the characters, it is setting up, without feeling like a laundry list checkbox of like, well, we got to show you how the crystal breaks and this and that. They don't do all of that, but they are sort of building into how we got here. So I do feel like if you thought this movie was a little thin or they just kind of rote, there's more lore to learn if lore is what you want.
And Lore is a character, which, Stuart, I don't know if you remember that character. He's like this rock monster. I thought he was all CGI. That is a puppet.
Yeah.
Blew me away. Like, he has a record player built into his arm. Like, total puppet. Like, after you watch that series, then go watch the documentary about the making of. Like, it's amazing seeing these creatures, how they were brought to life. But I got to tell you, Arnie, I think I know Yoda's origin now. Because, again, there's these different clans of Gelflings, and there's these ones that live under the ground, so they have big eyes. And my favorite character, Deet, looks like a female baby Yoda almost. And I'm like, oh, these are the Yodas. Like, this is where Yoda comes from. I looked it up. I looked up, Googled, is Yoda a Gelfling? And because of this series, like, yes, people are like, yes, Yoda is from Thrawn. It's already a popular theory that this is where Yoda is from.
I still haven't seen The Mandalorian with the baby Yoda and all that. I'm behind on all of it. But my understanding is Frank Oz didn't have anything to do with that series, but even he loved it. And he's shat on much of what Disney has done with the Muppets. But he was like, nope. They honored what we tried to do, and they expanded on it, and again, it's an endorsement.
Yeah, because it's a puppet. There's no CGI.
Well, I mean, no, I think the story, they honor what they were trying to do in Dark Crystal, and you'll be impressed. I don't think I'm as passionate as you, Jacob, just because 10 hours of fantasy, I did it all in one day. I think that might have been part of the problem.
Oh, I did it in 2 days, and like, I'm like, oh, am I a Dark Crystal fan now? Because this is amazing. Like, I like this movie, but this series, like, I guess because they took all those unconventional things in a kid's film, like the darkness and the gruesome, like when one of those slaves with the sewed up mouth gets beat to death and there's blood flying, like I couldn't believe I'm watching a children's thing.
It's not. We definitely need to stress that Jim Henson is not synonymous with children's entertainment, despite the fact that he was involved in Sesame Street. Do not let your wee ones watch that series.
Oh, this will give your 3-year-olds nightmares.
It's terrifying to adults.
When the hunter shows up, forget it. Your kid's going to be sleeping in your bed.
We're not talking about kids. I was traumatized. I mean, this is an upsetting, no joke. It is an upsetting show.
It is.
If you like Game of Thrones, they do like Red Wedding kind of shit here with puppets.
Yeah, there's still a scene that haunts me when I think about it.
Well, I'll check it out. I can't say I'll watch the whole series. We've got a lot of reviews coming up. I don't have a lot of time for television, but if the first episode grips me, maybe I'll watch it instead of The Boys.
There's also sequels, only in comic book format right now, but kind of created around the same time that they were developing Age of Resistance. So who knows? Maybe it will grow into being new future seasons of that show. Power of the Dark Crystal's not bad. It's set 100 years after the movie, and Jen and Kira are now really old. They're out of touch. They become bad leaders, and the people that have the crystal are now like demanding tribute and heavy taxes, and they've created a dystopia. You think things are all happy, but again, the point of the Dark Crystal is over time, evil creeps back in. Skeksis are eventually going to creep back in, basically because this fire creature from the center of the earth, this female protagonist, Therma, she comes up saying, the molten core is dying. I need a little bit of crystal to enliven it. Breaks off a shard, and well, you can imagine what happens after that.
Don't break that crystal. It's bad.
Yeah, it's pretty much a retelling of the first movie, but with a new kind of romantic dynamic in which she falls in love with a Gelfling, but how can they have a relationship if every time he touches her, he burns? So they deal with the themes of good and evil in that context of loving something that you can't touch. And it reaches a pretty good conclusion. They did do another 12 run, Boom Comics couldn't leave it alone, and I wish they had. The Beneath the Dark Crystal follow-up, it shows Therma and Kensho working, even though they say it's beneath the Dark Crystal, she's down in the Molten Core trying to fight off people that want her throne. He's up on the surface, kind of wandering around, like kind of without a point. You really do need like a villain like a Skeksis or something to give some like, dramatic tension. And he's just kind of going around and seeing how tax collectors beat up on his friends and not liking it.
It sounds like you got to keep this in the Henson family. Like, again, with that Age of Resistance, the Henson company was involved, his daughters, those who had worked on the original. Like, after seeing that, remake this film. And here's the crazy thing is you could put those films next to each other. And besides the Gelflings, like, it looks like it was all made at the same time. It's amazing what they were able to do then and how they could still make it look good today.
I do think that you have a point there, but I also wonder, did they tweak a little things? I know we're not reviewing Age of Resistance.
Yeah, no, there were things because I know in the movie they said the beings, they split apart after they cracked the crystal. And in Age of Resistance, they were already split into two races, but I think they were working together and then they broke the shard off. So there are little things like that.
I think they've changed a little bit of the messaging of Henson, the simplicity that Henson had built into his fable, kind of in expanding it. It gets a little bit altered, but again, I don't think if you really like dark fantasies that you're going to mind. I do think that that is the property to watch. Watch this movie, watch Age of Resistance. And if you really want to, the comics aren't bad. They're okay. I actually feel like there is a lot of quality control to this franchise, in part because it wasn't successful enough for it to be exploited for money. Like, the people that continue it are the people that always loved the dark spirit of it and are going to keep that alive.
I mean, the fact that Frode, who came back from the original one, now his son's working on it. His son, who was the baby in Labyrinth, now he's like, has taken over for his father. So yeah, it is something literally being kept in the family.
And I want to thank Rob for being part of the Now Playing family and donating to pick this movie. 3 recommends. Jackpot.
We don't always do that for people. I mean, it's good when we can because I'm like, sometimes people are like, I love this movie. I'm like, I don't.
Yeah, you donate for the review, not for the recommend. Those are not guaranteed.
Yeah, it's no guarantee of how you wanted to know how we responded. And surprisingly enough, we're all green arrow.
Varying degrees of green, but all green. And that's what counts.
Will we be this way next month? We have another patron pick. Clerks, Kevin Smith. As we come to the end of the Bill and Ted franchise, it seems like the perfect complement to go to the next generation of slackers. I've actually, believe it or not, I've actually never seen a movie with Jay or Silent Bob in it.
You may be better off for that.
You guys are bitter. You guys used to be fans, and now I hear nothing positive.
I'm not bitter. I grew up, and so stuff that was funny when I was 20 isn't necessarily funny now, but Clerks, I remember having good memories of that one. I haven't watched it since I originally saw it, so who knows?
I grew up and then grew bitter about it. You know, I grew up first and realized, hey, that's not so funny. And then around the same time, I grew very bitter because I realized the man behind it is a charlatan.
You can tell the story when we get there.
So, Rob, thank you again for your support. Everybody listening to the show, thank you for your support. It really does mean everything to us during this time that you guys continue to support us and enable us during rough economic times to keep doing this show twice a week, every week, reading the books, watching the tie-in series, editing the shows, and doing all the work that goes into the shows. Thank you so much for being one of our patrons. And Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me. And until next time, you are in danger, and we must leave you.
Remember me. We may meet in another life, but not again in this.
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our Podbean crowdfunding campaign, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
I'm not ready to go alone.
Without patrons such as yourself, we couldn't keep doing the shows we put out every single Tuesday. So thanks to you all.
How do you say thank you?
Falavam.
Falavam.
And a special thanks to Rob for his support of our show and for picking The Dark Crystal for our hosts to review.
The great conjunction comes. Now we will live forever.
If you enjoy Now Playing, please head to iTunes and leave us a 5-star listing. It's the best way to help spread the word about the podcast.
I don't want to go in there.
We have to go on. Come on.
You can follow Now Playing on Facebook and Twitter, where we post announcements of new episodes and where the hosts post movie mini reviews. Links to our social media pages are available on our homepage.
Follow the greater sun for a day to the home of Ogra. There, she knows all the secrets.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
I am still Emperor.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
My master is family,
sometimes,
and teacher, and friend.
Now Playing is edited by Steven and Arnie.
Then you can be the same as the other podlings here. A slave.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
Please, must listen.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Don't listen to him, it's a trick.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein.
Master, nothing is simple anymore.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
Prophecy! Prophecy caused all this trouble!
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
I should have told you these things long ago.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2020. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Now we leave you the crystal of truth. Make your world in its light.
Jen gets the shard, but barely escapes before the Garthrum capture Agua.
Argra, not Aqua.
Jimmy Wada.
I was saying Agua. Kira is captured to have her lice. Kira, lice.
The Skeksis would eat her lice. They love it.
I feel like there should have been everything but lice in this. It's more interesting that they have this power of dream casting.
Dream fasting. Not cat. The Dreamcast is the.
Oh, you're right.
The Sega system.
Is the Sega system. Yeah.
You definitely don't want a Dreamcast.
I don't know. That's like people love that thing now.
No, is that a thing?
Yes.